said, tell my teammates and my coaches, I grow out a little bit more and going to the home plate for having fun, because if I know hit nothing, I do nothing in the game, my teammates going back to my back, like Taylor, Sige, Corey, everybody do the best he can. That's the reason I play better and my team is in the position this year, I think.
Yasiel Puig, entertaining and always with something to say, comes up big for the Dodgers in the slightly controversial Game 1 of the National League Championship Series. Well, good morning to you. I hope your weekend has gone well, and if it hasn't, Vegas is all about selective amnesia. I'm Brian Feldman, joined, as always, by future Nevada Hall of Fame producer Magnum, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday morning on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We are also streaming on the Las Vegas Sports Network. The Twitter handle is Out of Line, 1340 AM, and you can find us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. It's a well-known fact that without an audience, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, pick up the phone, turn down your radio, and say what you got to say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. A great place to watch all the games. Well, listen, today, no way will 1 hour be enough to squeeze everything in that I have on my plate. But my Red Bull is cracked, my sleeves and pant legs are rolled up, and I'm rocking and ready and rolling to go. That being said, I'm a little pissed off about something, you know, we as sports fans are dealing with way too much lately. And I know from past experience, it is always good to get the negative crap off your chest so you can move forward. So once I clear my mind of that issue, we'll talk about UNLV not showing up for the second half of their game against Air Force yesterday. And I got to mention the four top 10 teams that went down this weekend in the NCAA. Wow. Are we all ready back to Alabama and everybody else? I mean, it sure seems like that after yesterday. And I talked to NASCAR's Kurt Busch yesterday, and it was really cool to hear how Vegas strong Kurt, Kyle, and some of their Vegas comrades are that are driving race cars. Pretty cool. Stick around for that. We'll hear that conversation in its entirety and the discussion I had with Golden Knights' James Neal and Riley Smith after their first loss of the season Friday night. James Neal was a little bit salty, so kind of an interesting, fun interview. It's week 6 in the NFL, so that means key matchups and our picks of the week. We weren't so good last week, kind of 0 for 0 for 0 for all the way around. Like I said, it will be tight, but we will do what we need to do to get things done. What's on tap at Bubby's University? You can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major offered is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. Yeah, that means they never sleep or go to bed. Bubby's University at 45 South Hualapai. Between Ropicana and Flamingo, go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. Mags, you know, I'm a little salty at everything that went down this past weekend, a couple weeks ago, and I'm bitter. And that leads to why I'm starting today's show with something I don't usually start with, but I got to get this off my plate.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, there are several rules in the games we statistically love the most. I'm talking the four major professional men's leagues in the United States and Canada. Some old rules, but mostly new ones that most of us know nothing about until they are exercised, and then we know they exist. And they're frustrating as hell. They really are. This started for me back on Tom Brady's path to his first Super Bowl. I'm not a Tom Brady hater, as a matter of fact, quite the opposite. I like and respect the guy, and whoever says that they're not jealous of Tom Brady is lying. But the fact is, Darren Woodson's hit on Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game should have been a fumble, and the Raiders should have gone on to play in the Super Bowl. Whether they won or lost doesn't matter. That play changed history, and of course it changed the rule book. The recent wound rules have caused, 2 weeks ago, the Detroit Lions lose because an officiating mistake that started as a winning touchdown and ended as a reversal, and an NFL rule required a 10-second clock runoff that ended the game with the Detroit Lions on the doorstep of a pretty probable victory, right? So if the season ends and they missed the playoffs by a game, that rule literally changed history. And to us Lions fans, that is catastrophic. Because making the playoffs for us is like going to the Super Bowl for Patriot fans. And then last night in the National League Championship Series, and when I tell you this, keep in mind I'm pulling for the Dodgers. Last night in the seventh inning, there was an out at the plate. Guy was called out, right? And then there's a reversal. And next thing you know, it was over. And the Dodgers went on to win the game. The Cubs, Joe Maddon gets thrown out in the seventh inning. I don't know what to say about it, Mags. I'm just going to tell you that it was something that has got to be changed. And the call was correct. The rule itself is not. Joe Maddon, who got tossed arguing the overturned call, said exactly what I feel. This is John Lackey followed by Joe Maddon.
It's sad. The direction our game's got. They've been gone. I mean, that's a textbook play by Kidd, and he got penalized for it.
You got to make a point at some point, man. I mean, it's like, listen, I'm not just going to sit there and take that when I disagree with it 100%. And I let Mike Winters know that. I let Mike know what my intent was. Listen, I could easily not say anything. Absolutely. And I could easily acquiesce. But if I'm doing that, then I'm going against what I believe in. And I'm not going to do that.
It's a rule. It's 7.13, and here's exactly what it states. Unless the catcher is in possession of the ball, the catcher cannot block the pathway of the runner as he is attempting to score. Now, I agree with that. However, the tradition and history of baseball are collisions at home plate. Everybody knows what they get into. That's what it's about. This, yes, was he impeding it? And based on the rule that I heard, the reversal was necessary. It is a piece of crap rule. Another rule like that 10-second runoff that I just talked about. These types of rules are changing the game. And they're also delaying the games and creating them to go longer. This has to stop. The bottom line is, I understand you want to protect people at all costs. However, they know the risks that are involved in playing athletics. I understand the youth. They don't get it. People feel indestructible in their 20s. But the bottom line is they are being heavily compensated for what they do. And these rules are changing and softening the game in every single sport, and they are annoying as hell. You watch next year, the rule in the NFL about the 10-second runoff will be changed. I guarantee it'll be changed. But it's not going to change the loss that the Lions just endured 2 weeks ago by a horrific rule in the game of football. And those rules weren't there years ago. And why weren't they? They didn't have instant replay. They didn't have things that could challenge plays like that. You know, I like instant replay. I like getting it right, but not getting it right at a team's expense, especially in the National Football League, where one loss can be completely devastating to your entire season.
Well, you pretty much answered your own question as to why this is in your rant. Player safety and compensation in the millions of dollars. Here's the thing. Major League Baseball, the NFL, whatever league, the NHL, they don't want careers and multi-million dollar contracts to be destroyed or thrown away because a guy gets Pete Rosed at home plate in the Major League All-Star game or any game for that. The number one issue is player safety and prolonging careers. These guys aren't making $40,000 a year working jobs in the offseason anymore. This is a
They're huge investments.
So for owners of these franchises who are paying a guy $3 million a year to snap a football, $12 million a year to hit home runs, $100 million over the course of 4 years to dunk a basketball, these owners don't want to risk their players getting injured. And you know what? Yes, it takes away from the game. But if you're a fan of said team, you don't want your star player to get injured. You don't want him to be hurt on a collision.
What does the NFL stand for?
No fun league.
Not for long.
Well, that may be the case. But if you're a wide receiver who has a four-year window in the NFL, you don't want to have your career end in year two in the preseason because some scrub who's trying to make the team takes a shot at your knee with his helmet.
Well, Megs, those things should be penalized. I am talking about rules like a 10-second runoff. How is that protecting the players?
Well, that's in a separate situation.
And
it's
taking more time. They do this huge review. Then they come back and say, the game is over. We made a mistake. Sorry, guys. You might not make the playoffs this year because you'll go 9-7. This game would have made you 10-6, but sorry. It's going to change history. It's going to take a year away from Matthew Stafford's career, because the bottom line is, Mags, the NFL, these games take a piece of these players every single time they play. And like we're talking about, there's not a lot of longevity. There is no safety in running off 10 seconds in the game. There's none.
Well, that's more of a penalized situation on the offense.
I understand, but in this case, it backfired. It did.
It's a stupid rule because the official screwed up.
He did.
You know, and you know, we could go back and look
Let's go to the baseball thing. Understand we're protecting the players, but do you really think that a catcher trying to be cautious with a runner coming in here, a ball flying into his head, that being cautious is going to protect him? I think he's in more jeopardy trying to be cautious than just playing the game.
Well, yeah, then you may be right there, because one of the things our coach has always told us growing up was, when you don't put maximum effort in, that's when you get hurt. When you try not to get hurt, that's when you get
100%.
Hurt.
100%. I told my son in football when he first took his first big pop, and we're coming home, he went to the hospital, slightly hyperextended his elbow, and it was about 2 weeks. I was dying watching him practice. He was terrified, and he's olaying. He looked like a freaking matador, olaying every guy that came by. And I finally, we're going home, and I said, son, listen, I'm not mad at you, and I don't require you in any way, shape, or form to play the game of football. It is a violent sport, but the pads and everything there are meant for you to be aggressive. The aggressor suffers the least in blows. Trust me, if you are the aggressor and you don't worry about getting hurt, you are going to find that you get hurt far less. And it played out that he ended up keep playing. We got his courage back, but I understand it is a brutal game. But you cannot play any sport tentatively, or number one, you won't be very good. And number two, eventually it will lead to problems, either physical problems or, again, problems with you being on the team. It is a bad way to play ball, and I don't know how we are going about this and going to continue to change these rules that really, to me, not only, you know, we're trying to protect the players, and it makes the games boring. When a game is slowed down to have to wait, every hockey goal, Magnum, we were there the other night, every goal is reviewed now. It's getting a little bit ridiculous. It really is. You don't need to review every goal. You can tell this is a good goal. Please, almighty, right? Every goal?
It's stupid, yeah. Okay. That's a dumb rule. And yet, the Brett Hull in the crease goal to win the Stanley Cup for the Dallas Stars against the Sabres
should have been reviewed.
Should have been reviewed. It right. Shouldn't have been allowed. So,
correct. Okay.
You know, the NHL It's a little bit of an overkill. I understand what they're trying to do. They want to make sure that there's nothing.
Pretty soon, there's going to be no need for officials, Mags. Pretty soon, you're going to have 16 cameras.
Right, because they usually get it wrong, so that's okay.
Ah, man, the human element of the game is part of sport. Listen, we got to take a break. We are going to talk about that UNLV game yesterday, man. I'm blown away by the outcome. Magnum said he saw it coming. I should have. I believed, even though Air Force is known for their second-half comebacks, I'm still a little bit astonished by that. We definitely got to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball, the NCAA. Four teams again in the top 10 go down this week. Like I said, it's Alabama and everyone else, and of course the NFL coming up. You don't want to miss the interview with Kurt Busch. And like I said, you'll bag on me a bit, Mags, when you hear the James Neal interview, but I actually enjoyed it. He was salty. It was fun, and I don't mind talking to players like that. You're listening to Out of Line. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We are the home of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Now they're under center. Rebels line up for the goal line defense. Workman now moves forward. He's pushed forward. Did he get in? No indication from the officials yet. I don't see it. Now they're saying touchdown. Touchdown Air Force. They take their first lead of the game.
Ah, man, UNLV, a game that looked like they were in the bags. I'll tell you, Mags, yesterday I listened to the first half of the game. Everyone did a good job on the broadcast. I thought, wow, this is pleasant. UNLV went up right away. Actually went up 27-0 before the before halftime. And then, you know, in halftime, right at the end of the first half, Air Force scored. But I still thought UNLV really had this game in the bag. They were playing really as good a defense as they've played for the majority of the first half this entire season. And Air Force can put up some points. And offensively, they were getting things done. They were moving the football. They looked exciting. And all of a sudden, the second half came. I turned it off. I did not pay attention. I didn't hear the second half at all, Mags. I heard that, you know, somebody said, that I heard something on the radio at one point, I guess Dalton Baker made a touchdown-saving tackle or something on a real long run that just completely fooled. It was a reverse, I guess, and it said that you should have seen UNLV. There was like seven jock straps hit the ground. They all fell out because UNLV completely got fooled on a play that, you know, that a good team and a good defensive coordinator sees that a reverse is coming. It shouldn't be that big of a surprise that your entire defense flows one way. That just should have somebody missed an assignment, right?
Well, there was a lot of missed situations yesterday by missed opportunities. You know, they got three turnovers inside Air Force territory in the second half, came away with three total points, including towards the end of the game. Mind you, they're up 30-27. Air Force fumbles. UNLV gets it at the Air Force 42. Armani Rogers goes on a run. Fumbles, a ball rolls towards the end zone. Kendall Keys has an opportunity to fall on it. It squirts out. Another UNLV receiver attempts to pick it up. Fall on the damn ball! He tries to pick it up. He can't. Air Force recovers it in the end zone. I'm telling you, I saw this coming, and I hate to be that guy and say, oh, I saw it coming. I saw it coming when Air Force went right down the field, right before the half, and horrific clock management by UNLV at the end of the first half. It's 27-7. They went into the locker room with a timeout, and they had the ball at the Air Force 12. That's inexcusable. That cannot happen. This is...
Mags, that's, you know...
Listen, I like Tony Sanchez. I think he's a great guy. I think he's exactly what Vegas needs. But we're sugarcoating it if we say that the two worst losses in the history of UNLV football did not happen this season. To me, the loss to Howard is
unacceptable.
Unacceptable, yeah. Inexcusable. And the loss yesterday, that falls on Tony Sanchez.
Yeah, you can't be that outcoached in the second half, Mags.
Troy Calhoun, he's a great coach.
Well, did they only score 3 points with an offense with the skill positions UNLV has? How do they only score 3 total points in the second half? That's what I need explained to me.
Well, it's poor coaching from the coordinators, turnovers. You know, UNLV
Did somebody from Air Force come into the locker room of UNLV and take their playbook at halftime? Because, again, from what I read about the game, the highlights that I saw, that is sure what it sounded like to me. Like, they made adjustments and UNLV made none. And that is complete coaching. You say, Mags, you've heard it forever. You see coaching ability in the second half of football games. That's when you see a coach's ability. Because at halftime, they look at some films, they look at some pictures, and they make what's called adjustments. It sounds to me like UNLV came out in the second half thinking they could play the exact same game plan in the first half and it would work no problem, like Air Force wasn't going to make any adjustments.
Well, here's the problem. UNLV fans, for the last 3 years, our expectations have been to not lose games like this. Armani Rogers did not play a good game yesterday. Granted, he had almost 150 yards on the ground, ran for a touchdown. But for the most part, Lex Thomas was bottled up. He had 17 carries, didn't break 100 yards, and one of those carries was a 55-yard run. So you have 16 carries where he only goes for about 40 yards. Xavier Campbell, barely in the game, 6 carries.
Scored a touchdown.
He did score a touchdown, but he only got the ball 6 times.
Right.
You know,
Rodgers seemed to pick up some decent yardage.
But throwing the ball, Armani Rogers was not good.
I
could and see that. The thing is, something needs to change. And what I think needs to happen, because to me, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, and Sanchez has been a very loyal guy to both Barney Cotton and Kent Bayer, but one of those guys needs to get the axe. I don't care which one. You need to send a message that this is not acceptable. We have better expectations of our program. Granted, that loss falls on Tony Sanchez more than anyone, but his coordinators, they did not help him at all in that second half yesterday. We saw it last week against San Diego State. Bad clock management before the end of the first half. They had an opportunity to get within one score. They ran 3 garbage plays, gave San Diego State the ball back. They got the ball to start the second half. They went 3 and out again. San Diego State went right down the field and put the game away. We're talking about huge swings here. Something needs to change. The loss to Howard, that falls on the defensive coordinator. It's inexcusable to give up 20 points to Howard, let alone 40-something. Something needs to change. He's going to have to send a message. He's got to shake things up. One of those guys has got to go. I don't know which one, because to me, both of them have huge faults and have played a huge role in UNLV struggling at certain times this year. I saw at the San Jose State game, bend but don't break defense. And people say, oh, well, look.
Very rarely does that defense work.
Look at the final score. They crushed San Jose State. No. San Jose State shot themselves in the foot multiple times in that game. Turnover, fumble, missed field goal, interception in the end zone, turnover on downs inside UNLV territory. That game was a lot closer than the final score indicated. It's good that we're angry. It's good that we have expectations that UNLV should not lose that game yesterday. Because in years past, people will be like, ho-hum, oh well, this is UNLV football. To me, it's completely unacceptable. I'm an alum. I'm a fan. I cover the team. I love the team. It's disgusting that they lost that game yesterday. It's disgusting that they lost to Howard. As far as I'm concerned, season's over. They're not making a bowl game. They may not even win another game the rest of the season. That's how bad this loss is.
I think you probably echo the sentiments of a lot of UNLV current students, a lot of UNLV alumni, and just a lot of UNLV fans like myself.
You know, New Mexico destroyed Air Force. Yeah. They had one running back who had over 250 yards. It should not happen. Air Force is one of the worst teams in the country. They can't stop anybody.
Yeah, well,
you could give you the ball, and you would run for 100 yards against Air Force. It's inexcusable.
I can't argue. I know that I heard that Kyle Saxelid went down. I'm sure, you know, that's your blindside tackle that had to hurt Armani Rogers because he went down right before halftime.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he didn't come back in the game. I didn't read that or not, but that's a huge loss, Mags. He's their only senior veteran offensive lineman. You know, they've played, Jacobson's played before, and it's not that these guys haven't played before, but the bottom line is Saxelid's the leader on that offensive line. Will Kreitler, the center last year, was the captain. Saxelid's taken over. And that had to be a big loss. Again, you lose a blindside tackle.
This is all you need to know about the game.
Okay.
Air Force put up 34 points. Worthman, their quarterback, threw the ball 8 times. 8 times he threw the ball. And you gave up 400 yards on the ground.
Man, it's disgusting. You know, the UNLV is not the only team that played badly yesterday. Like, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think that their season shot, we're definitely going to have to see an improvement. Tony Sanchez is still going to get a bye this year. Obviously, he's not on the chopping block.
He shouldn't be on the chopping block.
And I agree with that 100%. But I'll tell you, Mags, if they're at the same exact spot next season at this time with Armani Rogers being a junior, you know, they will lose Devontae Boyd. They will lose Kyle Saxelid and a few other seniors. But the bottom line is they're going to have to be in a lot better place this time next year or next year at this time, Mags. We will be talking about Tony Sanchez being on the hot seat.
Look, he gets this year. I've always said you cannot judge a coach until he gets one full recruiting
class
through.
Yeah, I've said it should be like a college.
And he
should get a 4-year scholarship,
but
just like the students do. You got 4 years.
We have seen Bears defense for now 2.5 years. There has not been one sign of improvement from this defense. Individuals have played better, but as a unit, you gave up 400 yards on 78 carries. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, and I can't argue with you. You know, it's pretty crazy because
Worthman, their quarterback, ran for 5 touchdowns.
Yeah. UNLV has been doing this, Mags. We know about the defense, how porous it's been. The surprise to me, again, was in the second half, very similar to the second half against San Jose State. The offense either shuts down in the second half or he is badly outcoached in the second half, because we continue to see this. The offense should not get worse as the game goes on. They should get better. Yes, a defense is going to make adjustments, but as an offense, you have to make adjustments as well. Again, Mags, there was other games. You know, another team that shouldn't have lost at all yesterday, this game right here, I was watching it last night, entertaining but shocking. And you know, it's you know, there's certain schools, Mags, you know, like Michigan State lately has had Michigan's number for a while now, since Mark D'Antonio's been there. Well, Arizona State just somehow has Washington's number. This is not a unique thing. Washington has lost 7 straight road games to Arizona State dating back to 2000, and overall ASU has won 11 of the last 12 games, but Washington, number 5 in the country with Clemson losing, that would have put them square into the playoff picture. I'll tell you right now, out of the Power 5 conferences, the Pac-12 to me is by far the dumpster. I don't think they got a chance of getting in. No undefeated teams left. And after the game, though, you know, a guy who's kind of on the hot seat a little bit at Arizona State, Todd Graham, was pretty happy after this one. And a win like this can buy a coach a whole nother season. Yeah, great night to be a Sun Devil. Sun Devil fan, Sun Devil alumni. The last time that Washington lost, the last time Arizona State actually lost to Washington, it dates back to like the Jake Plummer era. I mean,
wow.
It's a long time ago. So it's just something that has happened. It's something that continues to happen. And Washington's out of the mix. You look at it, Clemson. I mean, Max, Chris Wynn and I were walking through the New York on our way to the Vegas Golden Knights game against the Red Wings, and we both got stunned stopping at television. I'm like, wait a minute, it says 24-24. They're like 25-point underdogs. What is going on here? I know that Kelly Bryant was hurt. I know he's been banged up. But the bottom line is, come on, Dabo Swinney, you can't lose to the Orangemen.
No.
And all of a sudden, my respect factor for Clemson went out the window. They jumped right off the charts. And now, like I said, it's Alabama and everybody else. I think you still got Penn State right there. But who do you move up into the top four? You got Penn State, you got Georgia, and you got Alabama right now, in my opinion. Is it TCU or is it Wisconsin? One of those two teams has got to jump in to that spot. They're both still undefeated in their conferences. I'm giving the nod to TCU, Mags. I really am. I mean, the only undefeated team left in the Big 12. They have handled business, and they've handled it all season long. They're going to have some big-time tests coming up. But if TCU runs the table and wins the new integrated Big 12 championship game, does TCU get in the playoffs this year?
Yes. If they run the table, they are. However,
what if Wisconsin runs the table too?
Well, that would mean that Penn State would lose because Wisconsin would beat them.
This is true.
So,
this is true.
Here's the thing. The Big Ten is clearly the best conference in college football.
I think so.
As much as I cannot...
How good is Michigan State,
I can't stand the Big Ten, but they are the best team, the best conference in college football. Here's a team, though. Don't sleep on Mark Richt and the Miami Hurricanes.
Oh, absolutely not.
Their schedule is very favorable. The only team left that they will play on, they play two games remaining on the road. At North Carolina in 2 weeks, and then at Pitt Thanksgiving weekend.
Those are both winnable games.
Other than that, it's
the ACC championship game.
Well, the ACC championship game, they may not get Clemson.
That would be so advantageous for them if they did.
Absolutely it would. Because the loss to Clemson now puts them behind North Carolina State, who I'm not sure North Carolina State's going to go 11-1 on the season, but they do play Clemson at home in a couple of weeks. North Carolina State is going to be a very interesting football game. The two tough games Miami has left are Virginia Tech and Notre Dame at home.
Yeah.
So
I like the resurgence.
He's got a quarterback. Georgia, I think, is really good too, but I think they're going to stumble. However, the SEC East is bad. The entire SEC is bad. Can we finally get rid of the myth?
The SEC isn't as bad as the Pac-12, in my opinion.
You know what? I think the Pac-12
just beats each other up. That's what people keep telling me. The Pac-12 just beats each other up. But come on, Arizona State is beating the Pac-12's best in Washington. Never should happen.
No.
Cal blowing out Washington. I mean, that was a disgusting blowout.
How does
that happen? Not that Cal isn't a formidable foe for most teams they'll play in the Pac-12. That you do not take a beating like that. That was shocking to me. So I'm not saying that. And one other game, Max, we got to go to break. We're way behind, but I got to tell you another one. You talk about UNLV blowing a lead. How about Auburn blowing that lead? To LSU. It reminded was it like the UNLV game in a mirror. How the hell? I'm talking about Auburn and thinking the Iron Bowl is going to be a game this year. After that, Alabama's going to smash them.
It just shows how overrated the SEC is.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
And we'll continue to get this myth on ESPN.
But Alabama,
Alabama's the real deal.
Correct. SEC might be down, but Alabama is still head and shoulders against anybody in this country.
You cannot convince me that the SEC is good when you don't have one quarterback in that entire league. That's it. The offenses are garbage.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that.
How bad is Tennessee?
Ugh. Ugh.
Butch Jones.
Ugh.
I mean, does that guy have a job on Monday?
I'll be surprised, Mags. It's disgusting. Listen, we got to go to break. We're going to come back. When we get back after this, we'll definitely hear Blazin'. I got some cool stuff for you there, and you got to hear this interview with Kurt Busch. Get your pens out. A good way you can donate and help out, too. These NASCAR drivers are doing it. It's pretty cool. We'll be right back.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Well, Freddie was taking a big lead on first base, ready to score. And, you know, at least to get to third base and whatever Carlos hit. And as soon as I saw the ball in the gap, you know, I ran 100%. I saw Gary Pettis sending me home play, and I was like, okay, let's do it. This was a crazy game, you know, probably the most intensive game that I ever played. And, you know, enjoying the people here with doing this for Dan. And, you know, we have a great team, and I'm excited about it.
You think, if you don't recognize that voice, that is the Houston Astros second baseman, Jose Altuve. And what's he done so far to be blazoned? Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day in America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Well, what he's done, Mags, is he has gone 13 for 23 in the postseason. A .565 batting average. Three home runs in the very first game of the postseason to make his mark. The guy's 5'6" on his tiptoes, and he is the most dynamic and most exciting player to watch in Major League Baseball, and without question, my favorite player in the game right now. A lock, if it ended right now, of MVP of the postseason. I mean, this guy is just uncanny, ridiculous, and without question, blazing. But I can't stop there, Mags. I got to give another blazing out to Justin Verlander. How about going a complete game, his second one in postseason history, did it the last time in 2012 with the Detroit Tigers. Verlander is 8-0 since he came over from Detroit on August 31st. He threw 124 pitches, the most he's thrown in a game in 4 years, 13 strikeouts, which is the most in a postseason game since Tim Lipscomb did it in 2010. It is the seventh career 10-plus strikeout game in the postseason for Justin Verlander, the most in Major League Baseball. History. Here's Justin Verlander and his manager after the game.
When I got here, one of the first things I did was have a conversation with AJ about how he would like to use me, and he told me that he didn't plan on trying to shorten my leash or take me out early. It was, you know, we would have conversations, and I would be honest with him, and he would be honest with me about how I felt. And after the eighth inning, he didn't even ask. I don't think he needed to. He asked after the seventh, and I kind of like probably wasn't the nicest guy to him. I was just like, yeah, I'm good. And then there was no conversation after the eighth. It was mine to win or lose.
You know, big moments are meant for big time performers, and from pitch one, you know, Justin Verlander was big for this team. Really, pitch one as an Astro, but most importantly, this game today, he was exceptional in every way. I mean, this is such a big moment for our team, but he put us on his back today with his pitching.
Justin Verlander, a man among men when it comes to taking the bump anytime. And right now in the postseason, he's pitching lights out, which means definitely fear factor for players on other teams that he's going to be opposing. The Yankees now and the Dodgers and the Cubs, whoever come out of the National League, man, I don't want to see Justin Verlander on the bump. And you said Kate Upton, stay away from him. She just needs to be up in the skybox looking down, and it motivates the hell out of that guy right now because he is completely 100% lights out.
And good for Houston because they've done it the right way. I mean, remember a couple of years ago, they were for like 2 or 3 years the worst team in baseball. They built through the minor league system. They did it the right way. They're feeling the fruits of that of that hard, you know, terrible no time, you know. And you know, the other thing is good for the city of Houston as it helps them heal from the horrible hurricane hit them. You know, it's
Mags,
a great story.
It's like, you know, it's wild. It's like Katrina when the Saints did it, you know, in 2008, and here Houston's doing it in 2017. Call it irony, call you what you want, but it's like a kind of reverse karma osmosis or something, man, where a team, you know, that just comes out of nowhere. And it's not Houston came out of nowhere. They're one of the best teams in baseball, but pretty cool. Listen, I want to give a quick honorable mention blazing to my friend Melissa, who just moved here from New York. Not only is she blazing, but she is the biggest Yankees fan I know. I've said it before, and that is saying a lot, as there are probably more Yankee fans than any other team fans in the Major League Baseball, and I personally know a lot of Yankees fans, but she's the biggest. Welcome to Vegas, Melissa. I'd say go Yankees, but I wouldn't really mean it. She's got a tattoo of Yankee Stadium on her arm. Mags, I showed it to you before the show. She has an autograph of Don Mattingly. It's too long of a story to tell. I had her text it to me last night, but it's pretty cool. Anyways, that's an honorable mention, Blazin'. Something else that is Blazin' is the way the Las Vegas community has come together following one of the most horrific events in United States history. That happened right here. NASCAR driver founder Kurt Busch, who is a Las Vegas native, is also a part of a campaign that is helping out. Kurt would have been on the show today live, but he's in Alabama and is racing today. But we were able to spend some time on a recorded line yesterday and talked about racing, his career, and how he and other drivers with Las Vegas ties are Vegas strong and how we can partner up with them. This is a portion of that interview and what we talked about yesterday.
Okay, we're here talking to Kurt Busch. We've got him on. We're recording this the day before we're actually going to put him on the show. Kurt, of course, at the Talladega Motor Speedway in Alabama. I believe it's the Alabama 500, right?
Yeah, it is, Brian. We're here for a race weekend, part of our playoffs, and wish I could come to Vegas and be on the show live, but thanks for allowing us to be on the tape.
No, really honored and happy to have you on. Kurt, you know, before we get to talking about racing, of course, being a Las Vegas native right now, how has this last couple weeks affected you? I know you've been on the road and haven't been able to be here, maybe to see what's been going on and how this community is bonded together. But what's going through your head and what's been going on with you watching this happen here in Las Vegas?
I mean, first of all, just to hear about the tragedy and to wake up to my phone just littered with messages and thoughts and people reaching out to me, and then for me to connect with friends and family that are in the Las Vegas area to check on everybody. It's a tough situation and something that really hits you in your heart, because it is from where I'm from and my hometown and where I grew up. And luckily everybody and everybody that I knew and connected with everybody else was safe. But still, it was a tragedy on a national level, on a world scale. And it's really just difficult to grasp it all. And I just want to give my prayers and thoughts and condolences to those who have been affected by this.
So many of us, and I had the same thing. You know, first thing I did, of course, check on my children and make sure that they weren't at the event. And then, of course, the next day to wake up, just a humbling experience, how many people care around the country, friends that I have and family checking on us. But, you know, being a transplant, I moved out here in 2004, just amazed, you know, being one of probably the most transient areas in the country, to see all these people from different walks of life, different areas that have become Las Vegans, so to speak, bonding together in a community. It was really humbling, and, you know, sometimes it's tragedies like this that do bring a community together, and we definitely saw that here in Vegas, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, growing up in Southern Nevada, there is a town outside of the Strip, the glitz and the glamour and everything that's going on with the casinos and restaurants and entertainment. There really is a strong community, and there's normalcy that you can say that the town has outside of that Strip. And it really was broken apart by this tragedy. And it's amazing to see, like you said, everybody from different walks of life and the transient people that have moved there all come together as one. And it can inspire a lot of different people from different spots to encourage them to do different things to help our community become stronger from such a tragic event. And that's what I hope comes out of this.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, there's been so much turmoil and controversy here in the United States based on our politics, and I don't want to get into all that. But it is definitely nice to see U.S. citizens with the hurricanes and the tragedies the natural tragedies we've experienced, and then here in Vegas to have an actual real-life catastrophe brought about by man. And again, we've watched the United States come together, and Vegas is just an exemplary of that. You know, speaking of NASCAR, I became a big NASCAR fan when I moved out here in 2004. Before that, believe it or not, I followed open wheel racing a little bit more. And I know you just weren't you just if I'm not mistaken, it was 2014. You were the Indianapolis 500 Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah, I gave it a good shot to run the Indianapolis 500 a few years ago, and all my stock car experience and oval track experience, I felt like that was the best place to go for it and try out the open wheel cars and at that track and be part of the famed Indy 500. And loved it. I had a blast. And like I said, I got rookie of the race, and really a unique experience to go run a car in an open cockpit at 230 miles an hour. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask the difference. I mean, you know, it's kind of tough. You grew up a NASCAR bump and grind driver, and then you switch over to open wheel. Funny, I started off fascinated with open wheel, but I moved out here. And, to you know, when people try to tell me that auto racers aren't athletes, I say, why don't you get behind the wheel of one of these machines, I won't even call it a vehicle, and try driving around and staying focused for 3 hours with your hair on fire, because that's about what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely intense focus, and the training and the whole atmosphere around racing is focused on hydration, staying flexible to have your muscles absorb you know, the heat that these cars produce and the stamina that you have to have as a racer. I mean, 3 hours at a time, it's a long 3 hours, and you're like on a marathon pace. And then when I ran Indy and stayed on my NASCAR schedule, it really taxed my body, and I felt like the training and the mental focus that I went through with all that, I was inspired really by the military to do such, and that's the culmination of running that weekend's race was on Memorial Day weekend, and it really gives you that that deep down feeling from what's inside your heart to make it through and to do it and to be an inspiration, and that's what I'm feeling from all of everybody in Las Vegas right now, especially with the hashtag Vegas Strong.
No question about it. What now? The one thing I haven't seen, you know, I've watched, I've seen tributes in obviously Major League Baseball with the playoffs going on with football. What has NASCAR, you know, and again, I apologize for not knowing, but has NASCAR done anything or recognized what's happened in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, we have. We've run a decal on all the cars. There was a moment of silence before our next race, and everybody is coming together very strongly, especially the Vegas group. There's a big group of the Vegas drivers that have come together. Myself, my little brother, Noah Gragson, Jamie Little, even a pit reporter, Brendan Gong, and Spencer Gallagher arranged us all to get together. And there's now a website, drivers for Las Vegas.com. So drivers for Las Vegas.com, we're raising funds through T-shirts and sticker sales and just trying to create awareness around the tragedy in Vegas. And it's neat to see the group here in Vegas as drivers come together on this level.
No, that is
really cool. I talked to Kurt a bit more, but really doing a lot, and it meant so much to him and touched all the drivers. And again, you guys can donate by going to driversforvegas.com. Check it out. It is run by NASCAR. The drivers, Kurt and Kyle Busch, really involved in this, and it's a way for you to give back, and it is way cool. Mags, we're going to skip real quickly because we're almost out of time. We got to just do the Vegas Golden Knights. If you'll give me the cue for the intro real quick, we'll do that. We'll come back with our picks, and we're going to have to go.
As you know, our Warriors, they don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Well, the puck starts here, and Vegas Golden Knights, of course, 3-0 to start the season. Then Friday night, along came the Detroit Red Wings. They had a 3-2 goal lead in the third period. James Neal scored his sixth goal in four games for the Golden Knights, second in the National Hockey League. I talked to him after the game, but he wasn't very happy to talk to me. I was just trying to say, you know what? You're not going to win them all, James.
Hey, James Neal, we're doing the Nightcap here on Out of Line, and just finished up the second home game, Detroit Red Wings, talking with James Neal. Well, you knew there was no way you were going to win them all, right?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's hard to win 82 games.
We weren't going to win 82 games, but I mean, what does that have to do with?
No, I'm just saying tonight, how do you assess where you guys are at right now? I mean, 3-1.
That's okay. A better question. I don't... What are you asking me here? Like, I feel like we played a good couple periods. We had a chance to win the game going into third, and turnovers and a little bit sloppy, and we lose.
You had the same amount of shots. You both had, you know, you guys were leading that in a while. But, I mean, that doesn't matter. It's the final score that matters.
Right, yeah.
I just had to throw that in there. I thought it was pretty funny. James, you know, these guys are asked the same traditional questions. I have tape of all of his answers before that, and I'm like, I don't want to ask the same damn crap, but it was funny. I also talked to Riley Smith. We'll try to get that for you next week. Mags, we're almost out of time. NFL picks, I'll tell you right now. You and Dewey are both 3-2. I am 2-3. Dewey said he's going with the Packers -5 at Minnesota. I am going with, believe it or not, the Cleveland Browns. They're starting Kevin Hogan. Houston has had a lot of injuries, and their baseball team's doing great. I think that the Browns are going to – they're not going to win, but they're going to cover the nine-point spread.
I like Tampa. Arizona sucks.
So what's Tampa going – what's that line on that game?
-2.
All right, you got it. Tampa -2 in Arizona does suck. Hey, this is out of line. We are out of time. I appreciate everyone that's helped out with the show today. Mags, thank you. Thank Kurt Busch. We're out of time. Bye.